This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Hitler is singing and dancing again in the new movie adaptation of Mel Brooks's hit, the hit Broadway musical, The Producers. The musical was an adaptation of Brooks's 1968 film. The show won 12 Tonys, more than any show in Broadway history. It was directed and choreographed by my guest Susan Stroman, who performed the same duties for the new film. Her other Broadway credits include Oklahoma, The Music Man, and Crazy for You. In the new movie, The Producers, Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick once again star as two producers who figure out a scam to make a fortune. All they need to do is find the worst play ever written, then convince a group of investors to back it. When this awful show closes on opening night, and they're certain it will, the producers can run off to Rio with the rest of the investors' money. The absolute worst play they find is a musical called Springtime for Hitler, a surefire flop because of production numbers like this. Here's Gary Beach from the soundtrack of the new movie.
I was just a paper hanger, no one more obscure. Got a phone call from the Reichstag, told me I was Führer. Germany was blue. Hitched up my pants and conquered France. Now Deutschland's smiling through. Oh, it ain't no mystery if it's politics or history. The thing you gotta know is everything is showbiz. Hide myself. Watch my show. Ethel Merman, don't you know? We are crossing borders. The new world order is here. Make a great big smile. Everyone sing Heil to me. Wonderful me. And now it's
springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Susan Stroman, welcome to Fresh Air. How did you become involved with the producers in the first place?
Well, I got a call. I was rehearsing a Christmas carol down at Madison Square Garden, and I got a call saying that Mel Brooks wants to meet you. And I thought, all right, well, maybe next Thursday. And then the call came back, said, no, he needs to meet you tonight right away. So I thought, oh, my gosh. I left rehearsal. I went home. And so excited about meeting him because I knew everything about him. I knew the 2,000-year-old man. I knew every movie he had ever made. So I was a huge fan, and I loved his comedy. So I was very excited and nervous, and there was a knock on the door, and I opened the door, and there he was, this legend, my hero. But instead of saying hello, he launched into full voice the song That Face, which is in the movie and opens Act Two on Broadway. But he started to sing, and then he went right past me, right down my hallway, singing full out, got up on top of my sofa, finished the song, and then looked down at me and said, hello, I'm Mel Brooks. And I thought to myself, well, you know, whatever happens with this show, it'll end up being the greatest adventure. And in fact, it's ended up being one of the greatest adventures of my life. So I think everybody has a story about when they first meet Mel. That certainly is a story that I'll never forget.
Now, is that what it's like to work with Mel Brooks, that he's doing song and dances and you know, or things more direct when you're working together?
Well, the thing is, you know, Mel was meant to write a musical, because when you think about all his movies, he really pays homage to musical movies. For example, he has Frankenstein's monster dancing and putting on the Ritz, and he and Anne dance Sweet Georgia Brown in To Be or Not to Be. And even he has Count Basie's band on the desert in Blazing Saddles.
Let's not forget Jews in Space.
Yes, Jews in Space, absolutely. So there was a nod to the musical in everything he's ever done. So he was really meant to write a musical. He loves singing and dancing, and he loves those old movies. I mean, he's a kindred spirit, really, because we are able to speak about Top Hat and Swing Time and Roberta and all, you know, really, really classic movies, famous musical movies. We both love them. So the fact that now he has written this musical that had, you know, broke box office records and awards, and is pretty fantastic.
Now, one of the numbers that you added for the show and is also in the movie is a number in which is what Max Bialystock, this washed-up producer, does to get money to back his shows, which inevitably flop, is he seduces elderly women, and in return, they write him checks because they're so grateful for his attentions. So there's a production number in which all of these older women that he's seduced do a song and dance number on their walkers.
Yes.
Whose idea was it to do a song and dance number on walkers, which you could argue is in pretty bad taste, not quite up there with singing and dancing Nazis, but still, you know.
Well, when we started working on the number and that Max was going to somehow collect all these checks, in the theater it can be done more abstractly, rather than showing a million front doors or a million sofas where he's taking the checks. So it was done in dance. And but since I had immersed myself into the world of Mel Brooks, what could be funnier than one little old lady with a walker, but 20 little old ladies with walkers? And and then to add to that, putting taps on the ends of the walkers. So it seemed that if Max Bialystock was making these little old ladies so happy that they would dance with joy, and they would dance with joy with their walkers, and that would make it very percussive, very rhythmic. And in fact, it has almost a tribal feel to it in a happy way. And at the end of the number, they all hand Max a check, all made out to Cash.
Which he says is the name of his new show.
Yes. Yes, he says to invest in his show called Cash. And they say that's a funny name for a play. And he says, yes, so is the Iceman Cometh.
Well, why don't we hear the music that goes along with this this dance on walkers that we're talking about. And it's called Along Came Bialy.
They were helpless. They were hopeless. Then along came Bialy. They were joyless, they were boyless. Then along came Bialy. They're my angels, I'm their devil, and I keep those embers aglow. When I woos them, I can't lose them, 'cause I cast my spell and they start yelling fire down below. So romantic, they were frantic, then their prayers were heard up above. Heaven sent them their Bialy. I'm the celebration of love.
Who is it? Who is it?
It's Max Bialystock.
Oh!
This music from the soundtrack of The Producers, my guest Susan Stroman, directed and choreographed both the Broadway show and the new musical adaptation. In the Larry David HBO series Curb Your Enthusiasm last season, Mel Brooks was staging a West Coast production of The Producers, and he cast Larry David in the lead role. And of course, this is preposterous since Larry David can't sing and he can't dance. Of course, in the final episode, we find out that the reason why Mel Brooks did it. Well, why don't you explain?
Okay. Yes. Larry David wrote a wonderful script about the idea that Mel had had it with the producers because it was all consuming. So he would come up with a plan to close it by putting in the worst Max Bialystock he could find. And the worst Max Bialystock would be Larry David. So within this plot, he goes to meet Larry David and talks him into playing Max Bialystock. And he learns the part. He ends up playing Max Bialystock against David Schwimmer. And what happens, though, is he is the worst Max Bialystock. He goes up on his lines on the stage, but then launches into his own stand-up comedy routine as a means to an end, as a means to sort of get on with it, and to satisfy the audience. And, of course, it becomes a big hit and a big smash. So not unlike the original 1968 screenplay where Max Bialystock was looking for the worst show ever written. In this particular plot, Mel Brooks was looking for the worst Max Bialystock. I thought it was wonderfully written. It was all Larry David's idea. And in fact, it was the last time that Mel and Ann were on film. So it was wonderful that it happened.
It was Larry David's idea. I always assumed it was Mel Brooks's.
No, it's Larry approached Mel.
I should have figured that. And Mel Brooks went for it.
Oh, yeah. I think because he loved the storyline so much, and the whole idea is so funny because Larry David wanted to pay homage to the original screenplay and to now take it to Broadway. And, you know, the whole idea of him playing Max Bialystock, because the idea that if he were to play Max, it would absolutely close the show is very funny. So, yeah, Larry pitched it to Mel, and Mel loved the idea. You know, they're a kindred spirit. You know, their comedy is alike in the sense of they both have great wit, and they're able to – and both very smart. So the banter is fantastic when they're together.
Okay, so here's a scene from the final episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm's fourth season. It's opening night of a new production of The Producers, starring Larry David. As the audience watches the show, Mel Brooks and Anne Bancroft sit in a nearby bar, confident that Larry David is bombing.
Did you see the look on their faces when Larry David forgot every line of He went up in smoke.
Oh, God, I'm so glad. I'm so thankful. Thank God that this damn play is going to be over.
We're going to get our lives back.
He has freed us from the anchor, from the albatross of the producers, which has invaded our lives every single minute, every hour of every day.
Trapping us.
No more openings in Cleveland. No more sleeping in dirty beds in Pittsburgh. We're free. Free at last.
I know.
Isn't it wonderful?
How did you know that he could ruin the show? How?
The minute I laid eyes on him, I said, this guy's a disaster. He's a living disaster. He's a storm. He's like a storm that will destroy everything in its path. I mean, he's got this gift. Everything he touches, he dooms. He's a little cyclone, a little tornado destroying the St. James Theater.
I know.
Any minute now, the show will be dead. Here, a toast to the death of the producers. May it rest in peace.
If you don't mind my asking about this, I know you lost your husband, Michael Okrent, in the early stages of production of the Broadway version of The Producers. He was supposed to be the director, and you the choreographer, and you took over as the director. And then Mel Brooks lost his wife, Anne Bancroft, I think in the early stages of or maybe later stages of the making of the new movie adaptation. So you were both in the position of making a comedy while you were in mourning for your spouse. Did he help you through that period in your life?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. You know, I think The Producers has become a sort of a lifeboat for the both of us at two separate times, of course. But certainly we had just started working on it when Mike got sick and he passed away from leukemia. And I assumed I wouldn't work for a while. I couldn't really sort myself out. I was grieving so badly. And after Mike died, about 2 months later, there was a knock on the door, and it was Mel. But this time he wasn't singing. He sort of just pushed his way in and said, I have to do this. And he just really... told me how it would save me to work on this comedy. And this time, you know, it's hard to say no to Mel. And but in fact, I really needed it. I really needed to keep going. And because it was a comedy, it really saved my spirit because I was grieving so badly. And now to think it happened to Mel when we started shooting. Anne got sick and she passed away during editing. And the same thing, he would be able to come to the set and it was like a little life raft. He would be able to laugh with the actors and laugh at the scenes and, you know, give me suggestions and before he had to go back to his wife. And it's very difficult to have someone, to watch someone who is ill and watch someone you love so much slip away. And the idea that it happened to both of us and the idea that the producers gave us some relief is pretty extraordinary.
Did you feel that you were able to do anything for him in the same way that he was able to help you, you know, through grieving for your husband?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think because I have been through it, because he watched me go through it, he would come to me and we would talk about it. And I would know exactly what was going on. And 'cause he's very private. His personal life is very private, but at least he knew that he could talk to me about it and I would understand exactly what was going on and every step he was taking. So we've become very good buddies, you know. He's a wonderful, wonderful collaborator. But we were sort of like buddies, army buddies in the trenches during this whole process.
We know there were personal tragedies for you and Mel Brooks during the show and then the movie adaptation of The Producers. And then there was a national tragedy shortly after The Producers opened, which was on September 11th. You opened, what, in the spring of 2001?
Yes.
And then
yes,
a few months later, it's September 11th, and, you know, Broadway is, you know, close enough to ground zero in New York. What did you think about the show going on afterwards, and when did you feel like it was appropriate for that?
Well, the thing is, it was a terrible time. In New York, we were all grieving. You know, it was so different because when you do lose someone, there's always some place to go for relief of your grief. But when those towers came down, there was no place to go. All of New York was grieving. And it was a very hard time. But a few days later, it seemed people started to go to the theater again to be together. And where they started to head was to the producers as almost relief. And the producers became not unlike a Fred and Ginger movie during the Depression. It was an escape. It was 2 hours of laughing. And in fact, we got more letters during that time how the show gave people a little relief than we've ever had any other time.
Well, Susan Stroman, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Susan Stroman choreographed and directed the Broadway hit The Producers and the new movie adaptation. It opens widely on Christmas Day. Here's Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick from the film's soundtrack.
It's often been said the theater is dead. The critics repeat it en masse. But the theater's alive. It's gonna survive, although it's a pain in the ass. You waited forever and finally got tickets to get to your seat. You gotta cross pickets. The guy to your right is frightfully tight. The guy to your left appears to have rickets. The music's yuck. The lyrics suck. The casting is all wrong. And when you reach the bathroom, the line is 5 miles long.
But still there's nothing like a show on Broadway. There's nothing like a Broadway show.
You swear you'll never go again. It's simply not worthwhile.
You make that vow and then somehow you're back there on the aisle. That's why there's nothing like a show on Broadway. There's nothing like a Broadway show.
Till you're in movies.
There's nothing like a Broadway show. show.
And though it is expensive at $100 a throw,